written about the subject of missionary retention and missionary attrition. It's a very, very large study, which took a very long period of time. The great thing about it is the chapters are really short. And their chapters are kind of self-contained, so you don't have to read the whole book. You can kind of selectively read chapters and get a lot out of it. The other thing that's good about this book is that it is a study involving both what's called old sending countries and new sending countries. New sending countries perhaps being a country like Korea. Old sending countries being countries like England, the United States, you know, countries in the West. New sending countries being Mongolia. I understand Mongolia is the greatest missionary sending country per capita of Christians. One missionary for every 228 believers. So that's a pretty good, pretty good size per capita. And so it's very good, and it also helps us to compare what the different issues are as you deal with old sending countries and new sending countries. Another book that I would mention to you is a book called The Next Christendom by Philip Jenkins. Philip Jenkins is a distinguished professor of history at Penn State University. And I found this book to be outstanding because it's talking about where the world is going in the future. Obviously, to say the next Christendom is to imply that there's an old Christendom, and we're sort of part of the old Christendom, which is fading. And I'll talk about that a little bit in this talk that's coming up. But Philip Jenkins, The Next Christendom. That is a very, very good book. Again, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here with you today. I think we end, don't we end at 2:30? And we need some Q&A. Yeah, okay. That should be a real trick to handle that. But thank you for letting me be with you. I suppose in a sense, you know, we really talked about a lot of things and you have not had any sort of adequate opportunity to process what we've talked about. But hopefully it might lead you to continue to think. You've had the table conversations, which I hope was good and helpful. And it might lead you to think about some things. Okay, the topic for this afternoon in this final segment together is our changing world and the changing world of missions. Our changing world and the changing world of missions. Anybody right off the top of your head know what the population of the world is approximately? Don't look at the sheet. Huh? Very close. Our brother Pierce said 6.2. That's really close. About 6.8 plus. I mean, the figures differ. It ranges from about 6.3 to 6.8 plus. A really, really interesting thing is that in 1999, the population was 5.8 billion. So if we're at 6.8 billion, that means we increased a billion in 10 years. That's very significant. Look at this printout on world population that I gave you. It's a little printout. You could put a little caret thing in there and just put 2008, 6.8 approximately. Now, as you look at that chart of population, what are some of the things that strike you as you look at the printout? It's growing fast. Yeah. It's very, very fast growth. What else? Huh? Europe is declining. What else do you notice on that chart? Huh? Asia skyrocketing. In other words, where do you see the population increasing most significantly in the world? What areas? Asia? Africa? Latin America? Those are the places where you really see population increasing. Europe is definitely on the decline. You see, America is, we're still increasing some, but, you know, North America, but it's going to start flattening out by about 2150, if the Lord doesn't come back before then. it's going to start getting pretty flat. Look also at the chart of the largest cities in the world. I was not familiar with this term, agglomerations, that I found on the internet, but that's a term that's used for the largest cities. As you look at the largest cities in the world, what strikes you as you look at them? How many people there are, right? You know, and to be honest about it, in some of these largest cities of the world, these are estimates. They're probably bigger than this. For example, if you drew a 15-mile radius out of the center of Jakarta and then drew a circle, 15 miles, only 15 miles out of the center of Jakarta and drew a circle, you'd have well over 30 million people living in that 15-mile radius. But as you look at this again, what are some of the things that strike you? Quite a few in Asia. Uh-huh. I'm sorry? Yes. Yeah, largest in Asia. Mm-hmm. Exactly, exactly. Population densities would be much higher than some of the other cities. Mm-hmm. Right, right. I find it interesting to think about and pray about such issues as how is the PCA positioned for the future in terms of these kinds of challenges? A church that's small town, rural, suburban, you know, a denomination primarily, but the great population growths that are occurring in the cities. Though it was interesting, I read one article by a missionary that said that he found that people who came from rural areas were often the best church planters in cities because they were very used to difficulty and hardship. And so they, you know, they did a great job in urban environments, which surprised me. Well, you've got the list of 34 largest cities. It's interesting to look at this. Of the 34 largest cities, you've got 4 in the U.S. You've got only 3 in Europe. And then when you even start looking at the largest cities in the U.S., you have to wonder how much the significant population, even in the largest cities in the U.S. and Europe, is the result of population shifts occurring, immigration coming in from other parts of the world. So those are questions as well. So you have an increase in world population. The increase is primarily in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. Decrease in Europe, flattening out in North America. A little bit of increase in Oceania, but not a lot. You have the largest cities in the world, and these are only the 34 largest cities. If you were to go down below the figure of 8 million, like Nagoya, Japan, you would have many, many, many cities in the, 1 to 5 million category or, 5 to 7 million category. So you still have many, many other large cities that are not listed here. Then also, it's important to recognize that historically we've just recently crossed the line where the majority of the world's population no longer lives in rural or village or small town environment, but now the majority of the world's population lives in metropolitan centers, lives in cities. And that's just recent historically that we've crossed that line. You also have large migrations of poor people into the cities in various parts of the world, and in I don't know Asia so much, and or Africa a little bit, but different places in the world, you have large migrations of rural poor that are coming in. They've been at a subsistence level, or maybe even below that. They're coming to the cities to seek a better life, and they're kind of flooding into the cities. In some places, they're even called invasions. and they may come into a portion outside of a city and just sort of, you know, squatters' rights on lands. Eventually the city will move utilities out to them, and it becomes pretty soon an established suburb of the city. And, you know, this raises certain questions of employment, infrastructure, housing, services, health, poverty, loss of roots, loneliness, expectations of extended family toward maybe family members who would move into a city, and their level of living would increase. These are all creating this population shift, and population migration is all creating tremendous needs. And in that it's creating tremendous needs, it's creating opportunities for the church to respond to in those parts of the world, and even for us to be a part of responding to that. People migrations, you know, we can think of Hispanics and Latinos to the U.S. Some years ago, Los Angeles was the fifth or sixth largest Mexican city. The president of Mexico campaigns in Los Angeles and in Southern California. You have New York City and other large U.S. cities. I remember when I moved to Atlanta, 15 years ago, something like that, and I went to the same place to get my hair cut every month. And so the first time I went, my hair was cut by an Indian lady from Nairobi, who was a follower of the Aga Khan sect. The next time, my hair was cut by a lady from Bangkok, Thailand, all the same shop. The next month, my hair was cut by, I've forgotten, my brain's going dead here. Let's see, it was cut by somebody else from another part of the world. I went to another shop to have my hair cut. It was cut by a guy who was Iranian and who had been a part of the Air Force in Iran, but had to flee from Iran when the Shah was toppled and overthrown. Our air conditioner broke down. A man from Karachi, Pakistan, came out to fix it, who attended mosque in downtown Atlanta. I remember driving to the MTW office one morning on Beaver Ruin Road, and I looked back in this beautiful little glen of trees and nice setting, and sure enough, it was a Buddhist temple back in there. And, you know, you think about Muslims and Hindus, those from South Asia going to London. I heard recently that London is now regarded as the capital of the Muslim world, just like Miami is the capital of the Hispanic world. London is now the capital of the Muslim world. North Africans in the south of France, so you like Montpellier, for example, you can go to public housing in Montpellier in the south of France, and there are millions of North Africans living in those areas in apartments and housing there. Turks in Germany and Belgium, Iranians scattered around, Muslims in the from various locations in the Detroit area, West Africans in Atlanta. I can't tell you how many West Africans I've met in Atlanta, from Ivory Coast and other places. So we're seeing these tremendous people migrations that are occurring. This is part of our changing world. And of course, as we think about some of the application for missions, we all know that as we think of the nations and as the Bible talks about the nations, it's not talking about geopolitical entities. Geopolitical entities, which may have been very artificially formed at one time or another, perhaps even by colonial powers, and that when those colonial powers left and countries gained, these entities gained their independence again, the political formation of those countries was no longer had any relevance, and sometimes was very bad and brought about wars among people. But we think about ethno-linguistic entities. Also, it seems to me that something that we need to think about in the church and in our presbyteries is that the distinction between home missions and foreign missions is fairly obsolete at this point. you know, because even as you walk around your communities here, right, I can take you to an area of Atlanta called Clarkston. You would not think, quote, you were in America. This used to be a white, lower middle class suburb of Atlanta. You go by churches now. The large Baptist church in that particular area of Atlanta lists the 8 or 9 different language services that it has on Sunday. I say hallelujah. that's a church that's really making a tremendous effort to reach folks. So the kind of the distinction between overseas missions, foreign missions, and home missions is a fairly obsolete one, and we have a tremendous missional opportunity as a local church, even in our communities. We've talked about the demographic of the PCA. We've talked about the things that the PCA values, and both the opportunities and challenges that gives to us. I was thinking when we were in the C part of our prayer time, and something I've thought about a lot in the last several years is what are maybe some of the very specific things that we at least need to think about in terms of confession of sin that impacts our mission. And it seems to me that some of the things that perhaps we need to think about as a denomination, I'm not putting this on you guys, your presbytery or anything like that, but certainly that I think we need to think about are things like racism, stereotypes of other people groups that we have, fears of other people, that as these people come into our own communities and cities and neighborhoods, that prevent us from perhaps reaching out to them effectively. It strikes me as odd that we will send missionaries overseas to minister to a particular people group, and yet when those people groups move into our own communities and neighborhoods, we don't have any effective missional outreach to those peoples in our own neighborhoods. I mean, to me, that's a disconnect for me. It's an odd thing, it seems like to me. So there may be areas where we actually need to think about why, you know, we're not doing those things. I realize that certainly one legitimate reason why is that we don't feel equipped to do it. We don't feel able to do it or gifted to do it, or have the education that know about these people well enough to be able to do it. But those are issues that we can do some learning as well. Okay. I've given you also a chart on major world religions, and the one that's black that you can't really see, you know, I just had a black and white printer. Oh, you didn't get that one? That is on the back of something else I gave you. The email. That's on the back of the email, okay? I was saving paper. Notice that little piece of the pie that you can't read what's in the middle because I just have a black and white laser printer. That is Islam, the Muslim religion, that constitutes 21%. And then you see roughly the numbers in the left-hand column that are represented by each of these religious groups. So I just wanted you to see that and sort of see. I wanted you to see the unfinished task yet. I want to see that we do have plenty to do yet. We have plenty to occupy our time in terms of the mission enterprise of the church. As you think about where is the church headed, where is the church going, and I'm kind of rushing through this so that we have some time for Q&A. The church of today and of the future will look very different from the way in which the North American church has looked in the past. First of all, there's a shift in the church. It's moving east and it's moving south. I don't mean it's moving to Alabama, but it's hemispherically, it's moving east, and hemispherically, it's moving south. The greatest growth in the church is occurring in the east and south worldwide. The church also is much younger. The church of the next Christendom is going to be much younger in age. Many more young people are going to be making up that church. Whereas you look at the church, say, in Europe, that would be a much more of an aging church. So it's going to be much younger. Thirdly, the church of the future is going to be majority people of color, not whites, but people of color. Fourthly, the church of the future is going to be poorer. It's going to be much poorer than perhaps the church of the old Christendom has been, which will mean that there will be, you know, many, many kinds of temporal needs that will need to be dealt with. Fifth, the church of the future is going to have a lot of women in it, perhaps even a majority number. Sixth, the church that exists in the east and particularly in the south is going to have decidedly a much more enthusiastic flavor to its worship than we may be used to in the old Christendom. And finally, the church of the next Christendom, which is coming into existence, is also going to be a mission-sending church. A mission-sending church. So that you're going to have missionaries that are going to be coming online from those churches that are going to be very involved in world mission. Now, I'm going to show this PowerPoint slide real quickly. I think there are only about 8 slides in this. And this will kind of give you an idea of some of the things I've been saying. And I found this only recently, so I haven't had a chance to really look through this carefully myself. World Christianity, continent by continent. You see Europe. Oh, your colors are not, they don't show up quite as well as mine do. But it's that stretch between above 80% and 20% down here. And you see how the church in Europe has declined over a period of time. What percentage of Christians are evangelical in faith in the different areas of the world? This will give you that. You can see that really the largest percentage of Christians who are evangelical in faith are in Asia. And in something happened to that. Maybe that's... Oh, okay. This kind of gives you evangelicals in Europe. The light blue being less than 1%. So when you look at countries like Spain and France and Italy and some of these Central European countries and all, less than 1%. Percentage of Christians. But the percentage of Christians, for example, if you took a country like England or Wales today, I think the figure, the most recent figure I heard on the country of Wales, for example, is that less than 3% of the population of Wales goes to church even once a year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that would be for a special event, like a wedding or something like that, even. Now, this is a very old, politically incorrect chart back from 1887. You know, the heathen thing down here. And then you have world evangelicals continent by continent. Then you have cross-cultural missionaries. Where do they come from? You still have a very large percentage from North America, but you notice how large the percentage is now from Asia. 35% from Asia. And some coming online from Latin America, Africa, and other parts of the world as well. I don't really understand this chart. So anyway, that gives you a little idea of change in terms of where the world is going and where missions is going for the future. I think that the general trends are the decline of Christianity in the West, particularly in Europe, and the rapid spread of Christianity in the South and in the East, and also the coming online of many, many more cross-cultural workers from those parts of the world, whereas there are percentage-wise fewer cross-cultural workers coming from the West at this point. So there are things I think both to be praising God for, much reason to praise God for. There are things to be concerned about. Sometimes when I think of the church in America, I do become a little bit pessimistic, to be honest, because I wonder, sometimes as I look, and frankly, sometimes as I look at my own life, I become pessimistic because I wonder where those workers will be coming from for the future as this decline perhaps continues in the U.S. Okay, I think we got about 20 minutes for questions. We'll see if we have any time for answers. But we got plenty of time for questions. What are your questions? Yes.